We've all kept secrets, and some secrets are fun. Some secrets are playful. Maybe you kept some secrets from somebody which you wanted to surprise with something good, and maybe a party or something like that. But we've all, at some point in our life, have kept secrets. Some of us like to tell secrets. But secrets are a part of who we are. We keep information and stuff. Some secrets are fun. I'll never forget a few years ago, about 4 years ago, was my wife's birthday. And so for something very special, I wanted to do a little bit different surprise for her birthday. I actually, because we eloped when we got married 24 years ago, that she never got a wedding. And we talked about it through the years about, you know, how, obviously the practical aspect was that we saved a lot of money. But the reality was, is, you know, I never got to see my bride walk down that aisle. So for her birthday about 4 years ago, I thought, well, okay, I want to do something very unique for her birthday. So instead of throwing her a party, I threw her a wedding. And some of you in here, you helped me with that. There's a handful of you here. You helped me plan and prepare and everything. And we had a wedding in the park. And I'm telling you, she wore me out that week because she said, I do not want a surprise birthday party. I know you have a party planned for me. And I do not, you know, I don't like surprises. So don't, I'm telling you, she gave me so much grief that week over that secret. I wanted to tell her two or three times, you just need to just go with it. You just need to relax and trust me. I don't know. Maybe those 20 years of being married, she knew better than to trust me. But keeping that secret, I thought was going to lead me to a divorce instead of a wedding. But we've all kept secrets. A lot of secrets are fun. You have little secrets between you and a friend, you know, where there's those, we call them inside jokes and stuff. Maybe something that happened that you both still laugh about. But there are some secrets in our life that we keep. There are other secrets that are far, far more painful. As a part, we've been the last 4 weeks, fifth week now, we've been in this series, Eve and Adam, where I've been talking primarily to ladies, but obviously with huge application, lots of opportunities for guys to take notes. You'd understand more about those ladies, especially if you're sitting next to her this morning. If you're visiting with us for the first time this morning, we've been in a series called Eve and Adam. Like I said, talking to the ladies, talking about some of the lies that ladies believe about themselves and how deadly those lies can be, how poisonous they can be, and what the truth of God's Word really says to them. And we had a little fun last week, I think, when I talked about some questions every single woman should, every single girl should be asking. We had a lot of fun with that last week. If you were not here, you can go on the website and listen to it. I promise you, ladies, you want to hear this. And guys needed to hear it too, because it was very informational, especially for single guys. About the questions that ladies should be asking. But this morning, I, as a part of this Eve and Adam series, I want to address something that as a part of this series that affects so many, not only women, it affects men, as you're going to see here in just a moment, but that so many people carry secrets into a relationship. So many people carry secrets into a marriage. So many people have secrets and they don't realize it, that those secrets are destroying them from the inside. And one of the most one of the most common, that's easier. I was going to try it again. I thought, no, I'll find another word. Great use of synonyms there for all your grammar teachers. But one of the more common secrets that the statistics are staggering on is sexual abuse and sexual assault. I want to read a passage. Get this. Recent statistic. 1 in 4 women will be sexually assaulted at some point in their lifetime. Here's one that's probably even more staggering. 1 in 6 men will be either sexually assaulted or abused at some point in their lifetime. That is overwhelming to consider when you think about the group that is in this room right now. I want to read you a passage of the Old Testament. You say, "What is? Does the Bible have anything to say about that?" You better believe it does. It has a lot to say And we're going to dive into this. Probably, I said earlier this week, this is probably the most difficult message I have ever preached in my life. I have not studied a single time for this message for this morning that I have not lost my composure at some point during my study time. But I'm telling you, I believe that this morning is going to be the beginning of a new freedom for many people in this room this morning. I want to ask you, if you have a Bible, to turn to 2 Samuel in the Old Testament, chapter 13. I'm going to begin reading in verse 1. If you don't have a Bible, maybe you don't own a Bible. If you don't own a Bible, you want a Bible, after the service is over, you go right by guest services out there near the front door, we'll give you a Bible. That's on us. And if we don't have any out there, Aaron Gwynn back there somewhere, he'll give you his instead. But 2 Samuel 13, verse 1, should be on the screen behind me. It says this. It says, in the course of time, Amnon, son of David, talking about King David, fell in love with Tamar, the beautiful sister of Absalom, son of David. Amnon became, that's right, that was his sister. Amnon became frustrated to the point of illness on account of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin and it seemed impossible for him to do anything to her. Now Amnon had a friend named Jonadab, son of Shimeah, David's brother. Jonadab was a very shrewd man, to say the least, because he came up with this. Verse 4, he asked Amnon, why do you, the king's son, look so haggard morning after morning? Won't you tell me? Amnon said to him, I'm in love with Tamar, my brother, Absalom's sister. Let me just stop there for a second and say this. Not every emotion and not every feeling that you and I have is holy or good. There are many times where we have some unholy desires, some wrong emotions and feelings that should not be acted on. There are some things that are just wrong. And just because we feel about a particular thing or we feel a certain way does not automatically mean that we should pursue it or that it's right. And let me go on, verse 5. Listen to what Jonadab said. Go to bed and pretend to be ill, Jonadab said. When your father comes to see you, say to him, I would like my sister Tamar to come and give me something to eat. Let her prepare the food in my sight so I may watch her, excuse me, and then eat it from her hand. So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. When the king came to see him, Amnon said to him, I would like my sister Tamar to come and make some special bread in my sight so I may eat from her hand. David sent word to Tamar at the palace. Excuse me. Go to the house of your brother Amnon and prepare some food for him. So Tamar went to the house of her brother Amnon, who was lying down. She took some dough, kneaded it, made the bread in his sight, and baked it. Then she took the pan and served him the bread, but he refused to eat it. Send everyone out of here, Amnon said. So everyone left him. Then Amnon said to Tamar, bring the food here into my bedroom so I may eat from your hand. And Tamar took the bread she had prepared and brought it to her brother Amnon in his bedroom. But when she took it to him to eat, he grabbed her and said, come to bed with me, my sister. Don't, my brother, she said to him, don't force me. Such a thing should not be done in Israel. Don't do this wicked thing. Let me stop again. Sexual assault, sexual abuse is a wicked, evil thing. Make no mistake about it. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. I want you to listen to this next statement in verse 13. She says this question, what about me? Where could I get rid of my disgrace? And what about you? You would be like one of the wicked fools in Israel. Please speak to the king. He will not keep me from being married to you. But he refused to listen to her, and since he was stronger than she, he raped her. Then Amnon hated her with intense hatred. In fact, he hated her more than he had loved her. Amnon said to her, get up and get out. The sin that you and I think will satisfy us will always backfire on us. And we will hate that sin far more than we desired it to begin with. Verse 16, no, she said to him, sending me away would be greater wrong than what you have already done to me. But he refused to listen to her. He called his personal servant and said, get this woman out of here and bolt the door after her. So his servant put her out and bolted the door after her. She was wearing a richly ornamented robe, for this was the kind of garment the virgin daughters of the king wore. Tamar put ashes on her head and tore the ornamented robe she was wearing. She put her hand on her head and wept and went away weeping aloud as she went. Her brother Absalom said to her, "Has that Amnon, your brother, been with you? Be quiet now, my sister. He is your brother. Don't take this thing to heart." Dumbest advice ever given to anyone. And Tamar lived in her brother's Absalom's house, a desolate woman. When King David heard all this, he was furious. Absalom never said a word to Amnon, either good or bad. He hated Amnon because he had disgraced his sister Tamar. The first thing that I want you to understand this morning, the first truth that you and I need to really embrace this morning is this. And listen very closely. Your darkest secret that you have been keeping does not have to be your death sentence. It says that Tamar lived in her brother's house, a desolate woman after that. That's where the story ended for her. That's all we have to go on in her life as to what happened to her afterwards. But that secret that's so dark in your life that you have been carrying does not have to be your death sentence. Because abuse brings confusion. It confuses the mind, especially when it happens to a young child. The emotional and psychological effects. I want you to listen to some of these psychological and emotional effects of sexual assault. It includes, and this is just a short list, shame, self-blame, guilt, embarrassment, anxiety, stress, fear, anger, confusion, sexualized behavior, loss of sex drive, interpersonal problems, denial, depression, despair, numbing, apathy, post-traumatic stress syndrome, panic attacks, negative self-image, nightmares, flashbacks, self-mutilation, alcohol, drug abuse, sexual promiscuity. The list goes on and on. That was about half of the things that I ran across studying for this. I want you to listen to some of these statistics that were done just a few years ago about victims of sexual assault. Victims are 3 times more likely than non-victims to suffer from depression. They are 6 times more likely to suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome. They are 13 times more likely to abuse alcohol. They are 26 times more likely to abuse drugs. And 4 times more likely to contemplate suicide. Verse 20, again, it says that Tamar wound up living in her brother Absalom's house, a desolate woman. She felt alone and her pain. Many of you have experienced those feelings of loneliness, feeling like you are all alone in this. This is your secret. This is what has been burying you. This is what has been holding you back. This, you are all alone in this. And she probably felt like many of you have felt, that her life had been ripped from her, her innocence ripped from her. Though these are very common and normal emotions after an assault, it does not have to be your final outcome. It does not have to be where your story ends. Some people say this, time heals all wounds. That is a lie. That is a lie. Because I know plenty of people that have carried pains and old past wounds throughout their entire existence, and it haunted them every day of their life. Time does not heal all wounds. God heals all wounds. And we're going to see that in just a moment. God is at work in His creation at this very moment through the redemptive work of the cross. God is bringing redemption and healing to this planet. As this world spins and spirals down and out of control, God is actively at work bringing redemption to this planet. His plan is to bring redemption and healing. I want you to listen to a passage in Revelation chapter 21. Listen to this passage very quickly. In case you don't realize this, Revelation's last book of the Bible, it talks about future events. This is what John, what Jesus revealed to John about the future. This could be your future. Revelation 21, verse 3. Says, I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men, and He will live with them. They will be His people, and God Himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. Listen to this. He who was seated on the throne said, powerful words, I am making everything new. That's God's promise. Then He said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy. These words are true. Your darkest secret does not have to be your death sentence. I want you to listen to this song.
Thank you.
You don't have to live alone in your pain anymore. And this doesn't have to be the way your story ends. Number two, you, listen very closely, you are not defined by what happens to you, but rather who you belong to. For people who have been abused, they often feel like they're have emotions and feel about themselves as if they are damaged goods. They are dirty. They're used. They're filthy. That somehow they are worthless or unlovable now. They often feel as though they're not worth anything to anyone ever again. This happens because the assault has become the defining moment in their lives. It has become the defining event in their life, and their identity begins to be wrapped up in that. They think that everyone around them, if they know about it, would identify them based off of what happened to them rather than who they really are. I want you to listen to verse 18 and 19 again. From 2 Samuel 13. Listen to these statements again. It says that, so his servant put her out, bolted the door after her. She was wearing a richly ornamented robe, for this was the kind of garment the virgin daughters of the king wore. Tamar put ashes on her head. She tore the ornamented robe she was wearing. She put her hand on her head and went away weeping aloud as she went. Tamar was a virgin daughter of King David. And because of that, she wore very nice robes as a princess should. She was perfectly dressed. But now she felt, she tore those ornamented robes because she felt like that she would never be that special princess ever again in her life. Everything changed in that moment. And what Tamar did, her life's now become identified who she was rather than a virgin daughter of the king. Now her life and her identity was wrapped up in what happened to her. Your identity is not based on what happens to you. In Christ, you are a daughter or a son of King Jesus. Never miss that fact. Never miss the fact that at the cross, God restored the brokenness of humanity. He took it upon Himself. Here's the thing. We typically think that in terms of what we've done. But it's even more importantly for us to understand that what Jesus did on that cross was He took our shame. He took our, not only our guilt, but He took the pain of what others have done to us. Not just the pain that we've caused others. You need to understand, you are not defined by what happens to you, but you are defined. Your identity is wrapped up in who you belong to. in Christ, you are restored. You are brought back into His family. You are elevated to the position. It says, the Bible tells us and teaches us that we are sons and daughters of the King. You are a priceless virgin daughter, virgin son of the King in Christ. That has been restored in your life. Number three, covering sin brings destruction, but confessing sin brings deliverance. Listen to verse 21 again. When King David heard all this, he was furious. Absalom never said a word to Amnon, either good or bad. He hated Amnon because he has disgraced his sister. Now, if you continue to read the rest of this chapter in chapter 13, you'll find out that 2 years later, Absalom threw a party, brought Amnon in, told his servants, kill Amnon. And they killed him. His bodyguards, his security detail, Absalom's soldiers killed Amnon at the request of Absalom. He wound up killing his brother. But for 2 years, he kept it quiet. It says that King David heard about all this, and he was mad, he was angry, but yet he still did not do anything. Absalom never said a word. David, as a matter of fact, he even told Tamar, don't tell anybody, don't talk about it. It's a whole lot easier on the people around the victim to not talk about it, because it just might be uncomfortable for them. God forbid. I hope you detected the cynicism there. David never did anything about it. They were both very angry, but no one spoke up for Tamar. No one spoke up for the victim. No one exposed the evil that was done to her. Victims often think this, they have this mindset many times, that if they bury their assault and they don't talk about it, that it will go away or somehow they'll simply forget it. Many times, as I said, the families or the victims or the friends think that if it's kept secret, it will just go away. Those who have been assaulted often feel betrayed twice, because they're made to feel like that if they tell anybody, that they're supposed to keep it quiet instead of revealing what has been done to them. Everyone thinks it will just go away. But I'm going to tell you what it'll do. It will poison you on the inside. This past week, a couple of days ago, early one morning before work, I was going to run by the landfill and haul my garbage off. Well, I have an SUV now instead of my pickup truck, and so I had to put it in the back of my SUV. I had to put 8 bags of garbage in the back of my SUV that were several days old out in the garage, and you know it got warm this week a couple of times. I laid something out to set it all on, got it all in there, closed the hatch, got in the truck. When I got in the truck, I'm telling you, I almost threw up instantaneously. It was almost it was just unbelievable. Actually, you know, I had everything open. I had the windows down. I had the sunroof open. I had everything. I was like a dog with my head out the window trying to get fresh air. But get this. By the time I got to the landfill a few minutes later, I barely noticed the odor. You say, how is that possible? You breathe the same thing. Over and over again, you smell the same smell, it numbs your senses. It numbs those olfactory senses so that you don't smell it as strongly. It was almost bearable, almost. Someone once said, the problem with life is it almost makes sense. Problem is it never does fully make sense. Many times victims, they think if they just keep it inside, they just bury it, they just put it down somewhere and they don't talk about it, then they don't make their family or their friends uncomfortable having to talk about it. They don't feel like they're exposed and they can protect themselves. The problem is, it's like the garbage in the back of my truck. If someone else gets in, they know all about it. It shows in your life. When you keep that secret, when you keep it buried inside and you don't expose it for the evil that it is and get it out of you, it is like rotten garbage on the inside of you, and it infiltrates itself into every aspect of your life. It will affect the decisions that you make every single day. That poison will work its effect in every relationship you have with everyone around you. It will affect your, it will continue to infiltrate the rest of your life. If you want to bury that, if you want to cover that over, it will eventually destroy you. But to confess that sin, to confess that evil, not the sin you did, but the sin that was done to you by someone else, to confess that, to get that out, will be the first step of freedom. You have to get rid of that garbage that is left in you from that assault. The first step to healing is to tell someone what has happened to you. Denial will only prolong the pain. Denial will only delay the healing process. Because a lot of times a victim, man, I'm reading a book right now, and that's all about this. And it talks about the process of denial, how we feel like if we just, well, it wasn't that bad, or it's been a long time and I'm over it now, and we know we're not. Or this, they don't ever tell anybody. And they think the longer they distance themselves in time, eventually they'll be okay, the healing will take place. The problem is, it only prolongs the healing that is necessary in your life. To bury that inside of you will destroy you. What happened to you was evil. It was wrong. It was sin. Listen to me very closely. Do not miss this. It was not your fault. It was not your fault. You say, well, maybe you were a teenager and you kind of put yourself in a compromising position. You say, well, I drank a little too much or something. It was not your fault. Well, but you know, maybe I let him on. You were violated. The more you try to minimize it, the more you're denying it. Call it what it is. It was evil. It was violence. And it was sin that was perpetrated against you. Denying it will only prolong the healing process. You didn't deserve it, but you're not alone. Number four. The story, and this is where the healing begins. The story Satan meant to destroy you is the very one that God will use to deliver others. Watch this.
On January 14, 2006, I was a sophomore in high school. I had just turned 15, not even a month before. That was just a typical Saturday, doing errands all day. My family and I had gone to Kroger to get groceries. My brother had been really, really sick, and I was just typical bratty 15-year-old, fighting with my mom, aggravating my brother, just not listening, not wanting to do anything what they told me to do. And my mom just got fed up, and she was like, you just need to go get in the car and we'll be out in a minute. I argued back and forth with her for a few minutes, and finally she was like, just go. And so I was on my way out. It was probably about 5 or so. It was getting dusk. It wasn't completely dark. And I remember I was walking, and I was so close. We had a white Expedition, and I was so close. I could probably touch the vehicle. And about that time, a van pulled up, and just they threw me in the van and drove off. And at this point, my body is just trying to kind of, I guess, process like what to do. It was three guys, and they were dressed in all black, ski masks, couldn't see anything. And they kept trying to force something in my mouth, a pill or something. I was kind of hesitant, and just over the next few minutes, they all took turns in raping me. And as soon as it was over, it just kind of was almost like I was dead and watching it. I was not real almost. And maybe in 5 minutes, we were back at in the Kroger parking lot, and they just kind of threw me out and drove off. And I remember standing there shaking, looking around, trying to find, I was looking for our vehicle, trying to see what I should do. I didn't know what to do. So I couldn't see my parents' vehicle. And my first thought was, oh my God, my family's left me. My mom was so mad, like they left me. And so I immediately bolted into Big Lots, walked straight to the back, into the bathroom. I went into the back handicap stall, and I just sat on the floor, and I lost it. I threw up, was crying so hard. I did not know what to do. And I was seemed like I was in there for probably 5 hours, and it was probably only 15 minutes or so. I finally built up the courage to go back outside. And I remember as I was walking to the doors, I was passing the cash register, and I remember praying to myself, God, please, like, please let them be standing right there. And as soon as I walked out, I looked up at Payless, and I saw the headlights of my parents' vehicle around the corner. And I remember just, like, the feeling of thinking, like, what if they come and get me before my parents can get to me? And as soon as it was almost like I blacked out. My mom grabbed me, and we got in the car, and my first thought was, I can't tell my dad. Like, what am I going to say? And we went to the police station. I did not tell the truth. I was taking it to my grave that I was not raped that night. And for a good year, I wouldn't tell anybody. I lived the worst life. I didn't care anymore. To me, I lost everything that I was that night. I didn't have to have self-respect anymore because I lost it already. Me and my dad, I wouldn't even look at my dad because I was so embarrassed. I felt so ashamed and just dirty. Like, I didn't want my dad to know, because I was his little girl. I was his princess, and to him, I wasn't going to be anymore. And so, it was in April of the next year, and I was playing rugby, I was partying, I suffered with bulimia really bad, I had terrible self-image, and one night, I just was it to the end of it. I'd suffered for a year of dealing with back and forth nightmares and not being able to tell anybody, and one night, I couldn't do it anymore, and I attempted suicide. And I woke up the next morning. I was very, very, very sick. And my parents, I was in the hospital. My parents had me admitted into Lakeside. And when I got there, the only way that I stayed was I made my parents promise me if I wanted to come home, they would come back and get me no matter what. And that next night, I called and I was like, "Come get me," and they were like, "No." And I was mad. I was so mad. And I decided I wasn't going to talk to anybody. I wasn't going to tell them anything, nothing. And I was there for a while. And finally, they were like, "You're not coming home until you talk to us. So it's your choice." And that moment, I realized I didn't have anything. I was by myself. I memorized Psalms 4:8, and that was my verse that got me through every day there. And finally, I told them everything. I told them about... I had my therapist talk with me and my dad because I was still so scared, but I told him everything about the night that I was raped, the way I had been living, the things that I had done. It was just throwing up almost. Like it was such a burden lifted off my shoulders, and that wasn't my turning point. It wasn't that coming clean and that I walked away and everything was great, but it definitely was a step in the right direction. Got out. I started complete new school. Everything was different. I transferred schools. I had all new friends. I had a clean slate. And I, about probably a year or so after that, I had a church ask me to come and speak at their youth group. They were going to a camp, and they asked me to come speak, and they were talking. The message that they had for one specific night was about being sexually abused, and they wanted me to speak. And I still wasn't okay with talking about it in public. So this was a big deal for me, and I just felt like the Lord was telling me, like, you're going to be stupid if you don't. And so I did, and it was the scariest thing I've ever done. And I did it, and afterward, I had probably 5-6 teenage girls come to me, and just, I've been raped, I've never told anyone, I don't know what to do, and I don't, you know, I need help. And in that moment, I realized the night, January 14, 2006, that happened for this moment right here. Like, this, God turned what was supposed to have been the worst thing ever to me, He turned into something absolutely amazing. And still to this day, I'm not perfect, and I have struggles. There are days where I have to physically get up out of bed, and every day I have to pray for that specific thing, because if not, then on that day that I don't pray, God, give me the strength to overcome this battle, I will let it get the best of me. And on those days, God always comes through. He always puts someone in my life that day that reminds me that that God was there, that He didn't leave me that night, and He sure wasn't going to leave me in it by myself. And even in the days that I struggle, I have numerous girls who I wouldn't have talked to in months and months and months, and I could be having a terrible day, and I just can't seem to break through. And one of them will text me and say, "You have no clue the impact that you've made in my life." And those are the moments that I know God has His hand on my life. This terrible thing that has happened, that it's should have, Satan wanted to kill me, to break me, to destroy me, but God has a plan, and He's going to use it for good.
This is Emily Young, my daughter, and I would just want to ask you something real simple, straightforward, Emily. If there's one thing that you could say to someone who's experienced sexual assault or sexual abuse, what would you tell them this morning?
Don't keep it a secret. It's embarrassing, and you're ashamed, but don't be. It will start from the inside, and it will absolutely destroy the inside of you. The way that you look at everyone, everything, it begins to it's not just a secret inside of you that you keep inside of you. It begins to affect you in your daily life. Fighting in school with everybody. I hated everyone. It doesn't just affect you. It affects everybody else around you. And if you haven't told anyone and you need to take that step to tell someone, I'll be here. If you need to tell somebody and you're scared, or you need to sit down with your parents and tell your parents and you need help, I'm here. I'll be there. I'll be that first person for you.
The beautiful thing that God alone is capable of doing is this. What Satan meant to destroy you and your life is the very thing that God will redeem and use it to deliver others. Think about the cross for just a moment before I wrap this up, so that you can see this come full circle. The Bible tells us in Hebrews that as a high priest, Jesus was our great high priest. And it says that we don't have a high priest that can't understand what we go through. But it says that He came to this earth and He walked he lived this planet as a human being and experienced everything that you and I experience. Through the cross, through the arrest, the trial, and the crucifixion, Jesus understands what it's like to be betrayed by someone they should be able to trust. Jesus understood what it was like to be betrayed by a close friend. He understood what it was like to be humiliated, to be abused, to be beaten, violated, abused to the point of death. We always see these pictures of maybe a portrait or in a movie, Jesus on the cross, and he has this, think about the idea of crucifixion. It was a public spectacle. It was done before the crowds to absolutely not only humiliate you, but to torture you to death in front of everybody. And we always see these pictures of Jesus or in the movies. Like I said, Jesus on the cross, he has this loincloth. But the truth is, he was not, there was nothing covering him. He was stripped naked. He hung naked before his friends, before his family, before his own mother. He was publicly ridiculed, mocked. He was falsely accused. He was embarrassed, disgraced, and violated and abused to the point of death. Jesus understands exactly what you have experienced. He has experienced it. On the cross, Jesus identified with your pain, with your shame, with your embarrassment by experiencing it himself. But Jesus didn't just stop there and say, I'm going to be a sympathetic God by experiencing what my creation experienced. I'm going to do something about it. And on the cross, he took all of that shame, all of that guilt, all of that embarrassment, took it to the tomb, and then walked out of the tomb alive, saying, you're not going to walk in darkness forever. You may be walking in the darkness of your pain and your past right now, your embarrassment, your humiliation, your disgrace, but you don't have to stay there. You may feel like you've walked through the valley of the shadow of death. You don't have to live there anymore. It is time for you to get rid of that secret. It is time for you to tell someone, to release that, to absolutely let God redeem what has happened to you and use it to deliver others. That is what he is famous for doing. He didn't say, look, I love you enough to die on the cross. He said, I love you enough to die on the cross. I'm going to go to that dark tomb of death. I'm going to kick the back wall out of it so that you don't have to live there the rest of your life. So that you don't have to stay in that pain. So you don't have to stay in that secret that's in your life. That you can have hope in the midst of your pain. Because I have done away with it. Because I have taken care of it. Because I have taken it on myself, gone to death, and walked out of the tomb alive. You can experience new life too. That is what he did on the cross and through the empty tomb. And it's time this morning, as I read that passage in Revelation just a moment ago, he said, the hope for you is that though you are experiencing grief now, and it's okay to grieve, and though it hurts you now, it's okay to hurt, but you don't have to hurt like there's never going to be hope again. That passage in Revelation says there will be a day when he will wipe every tear. There will be no more tears. There will be no more pain, no more death, no more hurt. You can grieve that loss you feel because of this assault, but you can also have hope because there is a God who is redeeming your pain. I'm going to ask you to bow your heads. This morning, I want to give a very simple invitation. If you've been keeping that secret, If you've been carrying that pain, you've experienced that sexual assault, that sexual abuse. The first step in healing this morning is to tell someone. In just a moment, we're going to stand to our feet. When we stand up, I want to give you an opportunity. We're going to have counselors ready. We have several people all over this room. They're going to step out at the same time that you step out. But it's time for you to get that, stop carrying that secret. Stop carrying that in your life. Let us help you and pray with you about it. Let us walk with you through the healing process. It begins today. Freedom begins today for you. The healing starts now for you. You're not going to step out alone. There are going to be others. They're going to step out with you. There are going to be counselors ready to pray with you. We've got some resources for you this morning here, right here this morning. We're going to walk with you through this process. You say, well, I'm 40, 50, I'm 35, I'm 29, I'm 15. Don't carry this secret anymore. Don't carry this pain anymore. It's time to begin to walk in freedom. We'll have men and women ready to pray with you, encourage you. We'll have ladies for the ladies. We'll have men for the men. Maybe this morning you're the one that has committed it. Maybe you're the abuser. Then I want to give you the opportunity to. It's time to bury that. It's time to get rid of that secret. You say, well, what will happen? I'm telling you, it is better to walk clean and clear and free in the forgiveness that is provided through the cross and to begin that process. You say, well, what if I get in trouble? What if people find out? I'm telling you. What if you had to carry what you're carrying the rest of your life the way you're carrying it? Which would be worse for you? I'm going to just ask everyone in this room to stand to your feet right now. If you're physically able, please stand to your feet right now. Just continue to keep your heads bowed. All over this room, just stand. Your heads bowed, your eyes closed. It's time for you to come clean. Here's what I want you to do. Right now, all over this room, I just want you to step out right now. Don't wait. Don't wait. Just step out right now. Step out right now. It's time. It's time for you to stop carrying this by yourself. It's time for you to stop letting this terrorize your life over and over again. It's time to step out. Maybe you're scared to step out this morning. Here's what I want you to do. You just reach over the person next to you. You squeeze their hand one time. If you're standing next to somebody and they squeeze your hand one time, you don't look at them, you don't say anything. You just grab their hand and step out right now. Do it right now. Just grab their hand, squeeze their hand. Step out right now. The healing starts today. The freedom begins this morning. What God wants to do in your life is to set you free and redeem this story so that He can use it to deliver other men and women that have experienced what you have experienced. Step out right now. Perhaps this morning, you've never truly surrendered your life to Jesus. Here's what I want you to do with your heads bowed. I just want you to begin to pray quietly. It's time. Today is your day. Now is the time. The Bible says if you hear His voice, if you hear God's voice today, He's calling your heart saying, I love you. I have a plan for you. Now give me your life. Maybe you need to pray right now. Just begin to pray quietly and say, oh God, I know that you love me. I know that Jesus died to pay for my sin. So right now, God, I just ask you to forgive me, cleanse me, change me, give me a new beginning today, God. The best way I know how, God, I give my life to you. Now help me to live for you. Thank you. Thank you for hearing my prayer, oh God. Thank you for saving me today. If you prayed that prayer right now, here's what I want you to do. Just step out right now. We have some people that are going to meet you right here, right now. Just step out. You say, that's me, Bodie. I asked Jesus into my life. I gave him control today. Just step out right now. Just come down here. I'll meet you right here.